Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast. I am your host, Matt Rossi. With me this week are my two fantabulous co-hosts, Liz Harper and Joe Perez. And we're going to talk about Dungeons and Dragons. No. We're going to talk about various things going on in Blizzard games. And as we usually do, we've got to start with like something that isn't really news because we knew it was coming already. But Blizzard did a post about how cross-faction guilds are going to work. Did you guys look at it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I actually didn't get a chance to watch it yet or take a look at it yet.
Okay, I'm just going to go ahead, Liz.
In the pre-show, we were talking a little bit about D&D and how poorly the content was presented, because I, as a professional content creator, have opinions about this. But the post Blizzard made about cross-faction guilds, if anyone submitted that to me as a blog post, I would have sent it back and said, come on, add some details here. I go look at the thing and give me some more details. Give me some more meat in this post, because it's really super light on information.
Yeah. It does tell us a few things that I know people want to know. For instance, guilds are going to still be alliance or horde. The guild leader's faction will be the faction of the guild. So if your guild leader is a orc, then you're in a horde guild. And if your guild leader is a human, you're in an alliance guild.
But the thing is, we already knew that. That was in the PTR patch notes. I mean, we already knew a lot of this, actually.
I'm sure we already knew all of it, but some of it is worth mentioning just for people who keep asking me. This is going to be the thing I send them to get them to stop asking me. I do actually think that this is remarkably not a ton. I mean, it does kind of find myself wondering if they're just doing this like this because they don't have anything else to say about it. Like, it doesn't do anything else. You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like they're adding any new features to it. They're just letting people, you know, Horde or Alliance join any guild they want.
It's not even that they're adding features to it. Like, there's a lot of features that you just don't get access to, or a lot of things you just can't really do if you join a cross-faction guild.
It's basically, you know, cross-faction gameplay now has some limitations. Like, you can't do LFG, you can't do time walking together because that's something you queue up for. There's a lot of things you can't do with cross-faction gameplay right now. And it sounds like all of those restrictions are still going to be in place for cross-faction players in a cross-faction guild. So the only difference you get between current cross-faction gameplay and cross-faction guilds is you get access to guild chat and the guild bank. You are still another faction. You're still hostile to one another in the open world. I believe you can only communicate through guild chat. There's just, it's a pretty skimpy system. It's pretty basic. And it's just not very different from how it works right now.
I went from being very, very excited about cross-faction guilds, because I've been complaining about this a lot recently. I'm tired of getting stuck on geometry as a Volpera. And I was like, oh, I can, you know, cross-faction guilds, and they come out, I can finally go back to being a dwarf, and this will be fun, and you know, I can do stuff. And now I'm just like, well, why bother? There's not enough. Like, it doesn't, the restrictions that are there make it enough that it's inconvenient enough to not want to do the switch. Does that make sense?
It's like a couple of weeks ago, Joe, you and I were doing time walking together, and we were going to pull in someone cross-faction, and it's like, oh, you can't do this. It's just, we were all set up to, hey, we're going to run cross-faction time walking with some friends, but cross-faction time walking doesn't exist because you can't do anything you queue for with someone with a cross-faction player. You just can't.
Okay. Go.
But like, it's one of those things where, like, again, this is a feature that I know a lot of people were very, very excited about. One of our guildmates, Molly, who routinely comes on the stream, was very excited to go back to being a night elf. I don't know that she's going to right now. I don't know that this does enough to sort of like allow for that to be a thing. It's, I don't know. I understand why, and I understand that the game is essentially built in with that sort of being, I don't want to say hard-coded into it, the faction divide, but, you know, it just really highlights how old like the game really is in a way. So I don't know, which means I might be doing a thing where I let like our readers or listeners decide what race I change into on the Horde side, because I can't be a Volpera anymore. I have to switch, and I don't think I'm gonna be able to be a goblin either. Although I guess this is a question for Padilla in chat and those that play goblin. do you get stuck on geometry like Volpera do? Because if not, I can still be small and I'd be okay with that. But yeah.
Joe, I think it's just you.
It might be.
Well, no, see, here's the thing. My wife and I have a running joke that trees are the nemesis of her night elf, because she just rides into them constantly and has since the game started. Going back to 2004, hold on, there comes the turning dash. Okay, I'm fine. She's just always been riding into trees. So yeah, that's a running joke. Is it just she just has a magnetic attraction to wood? but yeah, I gotta admit, I didn't realize you couldn't even queue for stuff.
Yeah, you can't.
Even that's like, why are you even doing it then? If you've got a like, if you've got somebody in your guild and you form a group to go run a dungeon and then you can't queue for it because you're in different factions, what was the point of this?
You can group up and go to a dungeon like Mythic Plus, but you can't do anything that involves queuing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you wanted to do a raid, great. You all group up, you go to the raid entrance and walk in.
Yeah, but I can bring like, horde. I can bring horde people to my raids right now.
Yeah, I know. It's do that it's exactly. Thing. It's exactly the same, except with guild chat.
Wow. Yeah, you guys were really thinking guild chat's that big a sell? Okay.
I mean, in guild chat is a sell, but it's not
in a world of in a world of Discord though. Like, I don't know that it is. Mm. Like, you could have Discord on your phone and be typing to people while you're in game if you need to, or on a second monitor or whatever the case is. Like, I don't know that guild chat's that big of a draw. Like, it's neat and all, but I don't know. It's about what I expected, but somehow I'm still disappointed, and I think it's my own fault. Like, I can't even be mad at them, because, like, it's like, yeah, that it makes sense why that limitation's there and everything like that, but then, like, there's really no reason to be in guild. It just go on the other side. Like, we're going to do it like we used to do, where, like, you would have players that had a horde guild and an alliance guild comprised of the same people so that they could play whatever to decide on what they wanted to do. So, also, that is another restriction of it too, that I think we should also note is like, you can't just invite anybody either. Like, you have to, in order to be in a cross faction guild, you have to be, battle.net friends, battle.net friends, or in a community via battle.net already. So like,
see, that makes perfect sense to me.
It does.
Otherwise, you literally cannot communicate with them because they're the opposite faction.
Yeah, which again makes sense. But like, that's something that I don't think is being highlighted as much either. So like, you can't just be like, I made a character, invite me anymore. So you have to make sure that you're in those groups or communities or whatever the case is. So just something I wanted to make sure was noted.
One thing I will add to this is kind of a final thought, is that Blizzard has said they want to go into this cross-faction thing slowly and taking baby steps. And this is a baby step forward towards cross-faction guilds. But, you know, they may continue expanding on it. It may be one day in the future we will get what feels like a cross-faction guild where you can talk to each other, where you can send people mail, where you can use the group finder together. But patch 10.1 is not when that's going to happen. This is more basic than that.
A fair point. I don't know why I'm having trouble talking now. That's really strange. I think I'm actually really super disappointed.
Mm.
I bummed myself out. Great job.
It'll be good at some point. But like, it's interesting though, because like, outside of having access to the guild bank, it really doesn't add anything you don't already have access to if you're battle.net friends with somebody and doing cross group stuff.
Yeah, the thing is that my weekly raid already has horde people in it. It's just so it's the draw is, you know, I don't know if that would be enough to get them to join our guild.
Because like, you still can't trade either, right?
Right.
Anyway, all right, let's move on to something happier. On the 20th of April, which is 2 days away as we're recording this. And I mean, by the time you listen to it, it might actually have been yesterday, because you guys tend to like to listen on Fridays, I think. We're going to have another Diablo 4 dev live stream. It's going to be at 11 a.m. Pacific, and it's supposed to be about end game content and changes they've made since the beta. And I'm really interested in what changes they made in the beta.
I mean, they did do a blog post on it.
I was going to say, Liz, you could mention that. I was just going to ask you to, because you brought it up in the email. So, like,
come back to me, because I don't have it in front of me.
All right. Well, I mean, one thing we can say for sure is that they did do a lot of, one of the things they did was a lot of stress testing with the beta, especially open beta. There was a ton of stress testing, and that's actually very useful, because one of the biggest problems that Diablo II Resurrected had was one that they had no real way of knowing was going to be a problem. The way that the handshake that got you into Battle.net from Diablo II was the same code that they used originally when they first made the game back in 2000. And as a result, they had never tested it on the kind of scale that modern Battle.net uses, the amount of users who would be going through it. And the code was simply not designed for this. It was not designed, the way the server worked, the way everything was different, and this code was not designed to work for it. So what ended up happening was it was doing everything in a very manual way. Manual isn't the right word, but Joe would be the one to talk to about that. But it was doing everything the way it did it in 2000, and that was fine for 2000. But the sheer number of people trying to play the game when it went live was an order of magnitude higher than any test they could have done for it.
Yeah, like they didn't anticipate the crushing response that they would get.
They never do. They never do.
I mean, and to be fair, and you know, from due to a recent conversation, we may actually be able to have somebody on to talk about this in more in depth later. Ha ha. But like it's really hard to predict what your actual traffic is going to be, because pre-sales don't really give you the same idea anymore, because some people literally will not pre-order games anymore. They've been Peter Molyneux'd so many times, so they just don't pre-order games, right?
So they
wait till it releases and then they buy it and then they jump on, or they wait till a free weekend, or maybe they get it as a gift from somebody. So like, it's hard to predict what the actual bump is going to be. And if I remember correctly, at least from a software development standpoint, you bake in a certain percentage above what you predict as headroom. But that they're just getting crushed because that percentage is so far off. It's so far under what actually happens. So there's only so much they can do. It's a thing.
Yeah, and so that's very good that they got so much stress testing in with this beta test, because at least it gives them somewhat of a baseline for how it should work. That was the other problem, is that when Diablo 2 came out originally, the game was on your computer. And since that was the case, it didn't have to look up your character information every time you logged in or out. But since they were now using it through an always-on system, suddenly the character information was on one of Blizzard's servers, and your computer would call out, look it up, and come back, which is something that they do for like World of Warcraft. It's not tremendously onerous to do, but the code wasn't designed for that. That was the big problem. The computer would call out for that server information to, you know, what's this character? And the code would be like, I have no idea what you were talking about, my man. Are you serious? I'm supposed to do what? I mean, isn't he right there on the, no, man, no, we get it off of that server. I don't know what you're talking about. And now imagine that happens, things go into a loop, and then that happens another 35,000 times in a couple seconds. That kind of thing they did not expect. So Liz, have you had time to look at it?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of class balance changes in here, and I think for the most part, they're good ones. There are some nerfs to necromancers, which I know everyone I'm friends with kind of just made like the saddest face when they heard about that. But
not this one.
Honestly, necromancers were so overpowered in the beta, and their power was really front-loaded because they got their special thing, which was summoning an army of skeleton minions at level 1. And honestly, you were just super, super powerful right off the bat. But the problem with that was you didn't get much of a power curve because you were so powerful up front. So you would like level up and you'd get access to new abilities. And it's like, why do I even want these? I don't need this. I have my army of skeletons. I just want more skeletons.
Yeah.
And some of the later Necromancer talent nodes, there would be like 2 skill choices. And it's like, okay, this seems a little skimpy. And also, I don't want either of them. So, you know, Necromancer felt weird. But I mean, we're also getting buffs to a lot of classes. barbarians are getting a flat 10% passive damage reduction, so they can be a little less squishy, because they were a little bit squishy.
Yes, they were squishy.
Yeah, druid, all of their companion skills are going to have increased damage, because druids could summon all sorts of companions, and they felt not very impactful, but they're going to be buffed. And all of their ultimate skills, which I also didn't think felt very impactful, are going to have lower cooldowns. So having a lower cooldown, you can use it more often. Even if it's not super impactful, you can like slam those abilities down really fast. Rogue has had some damage increases, but the one I'm really sad about with Rogue is that their imbuement skills have had their cooldowns increased. Imbuements were where you could add an elemental damage type to your weapons. And, you know, you would imbue your weapon and it would last for, like, I believe 2 hits. But so you'd do the imbuement and you'd fire off a couple of arrows or do a couple of stabby stabs. And then you would have to apply an imbuement again. You usually have to wait a little while between those two things happening. And now the cooldown's longer, so you have less awesome elemental attacks. And sorcerers, I also have seen a lot of really sad sorcerers because the damage of chain lightning has been reduced, as is its effectiveness against bosses. That was another one of those things that felt really awesome, but it was so dominatingly powerful that just every sorcerer was just using chain lightning on everything all the time. Why do I need other skills? I got my chain lightning and I'm good. Everyone is going to get roasted. They're also doing some dungeon changes, which I think is going to be really good about reducing the need to backtrack. They're like simplifying pathing, so you can like get there without running around. They're going to make it to where like in most dungeons you have to clear the dungeon to move forward, and they're going to make it when there are like a few monsters left that they'll come and find you instead of you having to run around this mostly empty dungeon looking for that one skeleton hiding in a corner somewhere.
It was very one of the things I noticed doing dungeons on the beta was that it was very similar to if you've ever done the Icefall Caves / you know Cave of Frost deal, and you're you get the bounty, kill, you know, go to level 2 and kill 30 of these mobs. And you got 29 dead and you can't find that guy. It was like that. A lot of the dungeons had that problem on the beta. So I was really glad to see that they're going to make it so that after a certain point, they come find you because, you guys know where I am. I'm smashing everything.
Yeah.
But also,
I mean, just a lot of little quality of life changes with dungeons, like things you had to channel on to progress, have their channel times reduced. If a door opens in a dungeon, it's going to get a ping on your map. Just nice quality of life changes that will help you keep moving forward instead of running around in circles.
Yeah. So that's nice. I also noticed there's some general changes that are for everything. Effects like stun and freeze can be applied to elite monsters twice as long before they become unstoppable, which is good because if you have a stun or freeze ability and then you use it once and then now the guy's completely immune to it, it's like, what the bleep? I mean, what is the point of having, spent points on this if it doesn't do anything to bosses? So yeah, that's a nice touch. They're also going to be reviewing class skills to confirm that all classes have access to sufficient skills that remove control impairing effects. I think that's because I'm pretty sure it was, I think it was druids who mostly had a problem with this. I think barbarians were okay with it. Not great, but they had a couple. And some legendary powers have gotten their updates to their effectiveness, which, okay, that's kind of generic. But, it is still good.
It's good to hear that they're working on it, and it's good to know what they've done. Instead of them just being like, we're making updates from the beta. It's like, no, we get to see what they're doing based on the feedback they've gotten.
Yeah, like, going and looking at the necromancer thing, I definitely think that they might end up having to, like, bump some of it back up. Because I think when I looked at them, the way I felt was that either summon minions dying more often or the damage dealt by corpse explosion, one or the other. Does that make sense? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I'll clarify. One of the two big things that are getting nerfed for necromancers is that your skeletons are going to be weaker. They're going to die more, which means you have to resurrect them more. And corpse explosion, where you make corpses explode, will stop being the only thing you ever need to use for damage ever because it's so, so powerful. I would like to see with that that they start weaker, but you have more options later on to power them up. Because that's just, as I leveled a Necromancer to 25, and that was what I felt. It's like the more levels I got, the weaker I felt because I was not advancing in power.
Yes. I don't know. I didn't have much to say. But yeah, so that's happening. That's pretty cool. That relates back to what we're talking about with the on the 20th. They're going to be talking about that. They're also just going to talk about endgame content in general. There is a lot of endgame content in Diablo
that we haven't seen.
Yeah, we haven't seen much. Like the whole Fields of Hatred thing. Mm-hmm. We know that it's how PvP is going to work. We know that it's based around some kind of blood shard type thing that you have to purify, and that's a whole. It's not dissimilar. If you remember this far back, then like me, you are ancient. But back in vanilla WoW, there was the ruins of Ankaraj, and then there was like there were zones where you could go get this stuff coming up out of the ground and like run it to like an alliance or horde base and turn it in. But when you did it, everybody knew where you were and could come kill you. And it's like that. Basically, you get the shards, you take them to the place to purify them. As soon as you do, everybody in the zone gets a big old, hey, kill this guy over here. So they come running to kill you before you get your stuff purified. That's what we know. And that's from the video they put out last month. It wasn't in the beta. We have had no chance to test it. We don't know what it's like or how it works. We just know that that's what's happening for PvP. And that's one of a few systems. Like didn't they do it? Like, is it called Strongholds?
Strongholds were in the beta.
Yeah. And
they were pretty cool. I like Strongholds.
So we're going to see like various things like that. I know that one of the cool things about Strongholds is that they actually make permanent changes to the world, don't they?
Yeah. So I guess stepping back here, Strongholds are areas in Diablo that you can clear of monsters. Kind of like a dungeon in WoW, the monsters in a Stronghold are always going to be, I think, 3 levels higher than you. So it's always going to be a challenging area. I cleared several of them completely solo. Like, it was hard. I was in danger many times, but I cleared it solo. So you don't need a group, but it's challenging content. And once you clear it out, like, the inhabitants of Sanctuary are going to move back in. And you may see special vendors. You may see a dungeon in the area. So it's kind of nice in this world that is very grim and sometimes very hopeless to go in and say, okay, I'm going to clear this village of all of these monsters, and then people can come back home. They can open their shops back up. It's nice to see that. It feels very satisfying.
So yeah, that's the kind of thing we're hoping to get more information on this Thursday. I'm going to throw this around to you both. What do you most want them to talk about? What are you most curious that they could explain or lay out for you before the game actually comes out? We'll go with Joe first because he hasn't had to talk much yet.
I mean, the surprising thing is, like, normally I'm hungry for more information. I'm really not. I just want the game. I just want the game to release. Like, I just want to play the game. That's where my head's at. Like, I'm good otherwise. Like, I'm already sold on the product, right? Like, I don't need more information. Like, more stuff is cool, but just let me play it. Just let me play my druid. I'm happy. Like, I'll be happy at that point.
All right, Liz.
I am kind of in Joe's headspace. Like, I don't need to know more. I want to play the game, but I do actually want to know more about the Paracon system, which we saw an early draft of.
Yeah, like last
maybe
year.
Maybe a year ago. Yeah, about a year ago, they did a blog post previewing the Paracon system, and they haven't really talked about it since. And
is that still the system? If not, what is the system? What are we going to see?
I mean, I'm pretty sure the system we saw is still the system, but I don't know how it's going to work exactly. We haven't seen it in action because the beta only went up to level 25, and that unlocks at level 50, I think. So maybe level 100. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know when that comes in either. I know that it might come in at 50. It might come in at 70. I don't know. For one thing, like you get to like level 50 to unlock the second level of difficulty. And there's 4 levels of difficulty. So it's not like Diablo 3 with, like, you know, 16 torments. It's closer to Diablo 2 where you've got, like, you know, normal, hard, like, you know, hardcore and nightmare or something like that. Or hell. I think it was like normal. It was like normal, hard mode or nightmare and then hell. I think that those are the Diablo 2 ones. Joe, you know the Diablo 2 ones, right?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
I was
there listening. Were fewer
I crank it to 11 and go. Like, I don't really look.
Yeah. Point being that there were four difficulty modes in Diablo 2, and that's closer to what Diablo 4 is going to do. It's not doing the like multiple scaling levels of difficulty after like Torment 1, but they do have a higher level thing. It goes to a level 100 before you even start looking at like what's going on. So yeah, I don't know. That'd be something I hope they really cover. I would like them to explain exactly how that's going to work. Not that any of this will stop me from playing. I would like to know what that deal is. But all right. Oh yeah, my question would be barbarians. Much tell me more, please. Yes. Like, well, just imagine that meme of the cat who's just like looking up at you with enormous eyes, except he has an axe, and that's me for barbarian stuff. But
one thing I will note is that they've been releasing class trailers for all the classes, and they did release one on the Barbarian today. I don't know that it has a lot of information in it, but it exists.
Yeah, I'm sure it's cool because it's got a Barbarian in it. So you know, automatically it's better than everything else. But regardless, at this point, we should probably move on quickly to talk about some other stuff. Hearthstone Legends is right now, isn't it? Take the stage. It's still going.
Yes, I actually am not sure how long it lasts. I think it lasts, I think it's 10 or 11 days. I'd have to go look, but it's just a little kind of mini event where you go and you do some extra quests, you get some cool things. My first impression was, okay, this is a little skimpy on rewards. Like maybe we could get something cooler than this, because it's like two packs and four signature cards. And signature cards are cards, it's a cosmetic, cards with kind of full-length art instead of like a half, the card is taken up like the top half with art and the second half with a description. These are like full art, and they're unique art, and they look pretty cool. And the final reward is actually a Voidwalker card where he is like singing and wearing a bow tie, which I actually really want that. I just want it. I would be happy to have it like on a poster on my wall because it looks so cool and ridiculous. But yeah, that's going on. If you want to do it, just hop into Hearthstone, play some Hearthstone. I think pretty much any mode will give you some progress on these quests. And that's about it.
All right. Speaking of things you can do that are weird. Overwatch has got its one of its I want to call it an arcade mode. I'm not sure what exactly you would call it, but it's called the Bob and Weave event. And basically in it, it's a 3v3 deathmatch where you play as Lifeweaver.
Yeah.
And so does everybody else in the deathmatch. Like if it's 3v3, it's three Lifeweavers versus three Lifeweavers. And each team has a Bob. B-O-B, the big robot dude, the butler. I guess he's a robot butler, is he? Like a robot butler or a robot assistant? I don't know. But yeah, each team gets one of them, and then they have to spend the event trying to maneuver their Bob around using their life grips and their the other ability that would do it. I remember life grip.
Yeah.
Pedal platform is the other one.
Yeah, I think you're just using life grip to like hurl Bob around the battleground.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a neat way to kind of check out how Lifeweaver works, because if you didn't buy the Battle Pass, you probably don't have a Lifeweaver yet.
Yeah, and we're mentioning it now because by the time we mention it next week, it would be too late. It would be literally be over. So we're mentioning it now so you guys get a chance to still get in there and try it by the time you hear this. If you're not listening to us live, which you should be because we're amazing. We're just so great. But in addition to that, which I thought was cool that Liz remembered to mention that, she also put in this one, which is worth mentioning it for the same reason. If you haven't gotten your Amazon Prime Gaming Big Battle Bear yet, if you haven't like used Amazon Prime Gaming to hook yourself up, you've got till the Thursday of next week, which is the 27th. So yeah, if you don't get it by then, you won't be able. That's, you know, it's pretty simple to get. I think we have a post on the site about it.
We do. You just have to be an Amazon Prime member, and you can claim it on the Amazon Prime Gaming page. You have to have Amazon Prime. It's like has to be linked to Twitch. There's this whole series of steps that seems overcomplicated, but basically, you're an Amazon Prime subscriber. You go to the Prime Gaming page. You find the big battle bear and just click the claim button, and it'll walk you through the rest.
So yeah, if you don't already have this thing and you want it, you can get it now. And since it was it's the original TCG, I believe.
Yeah.
That means it is hard to get nowadays. You basically have to just find an unclaimed card. So yeah, it's a new way to get it.
You still can find those cards on like eBay, but they're several hundred dollars. So if you want it, I would get it now. You can also sign up for a free trial of Prime and get it that way. So there are options. You got options and you can get a bare amount.
So yeah, at this point, therefore, we're going to move on to actual questions from you guys, because we have a few, and you know, we're gonna do that. If you've got a question for the show, you can do what lovely listeners to the show did this week and ask questions in our Discord. Thank you to all of you. It made this much easier than it normally is. I very much appreciate that. That's our Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel. If you don't happen to be a patron for the site, lots of reasons why that might be, to steal Joe's usual statement on it. We totally appreciate you just being here anyway, but we've got a Q and Podcast Questions channel that you can ask questions in as well, and we appreciate you doing that. And if you'd rather email us, you can email us at podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for the show. This week, there was a question that I thought was perfect for Blizzard Watch, but you said lore watch in the subject, so I didn't use it. That's for you, Joe.
Aww.
Yes. Anyway, now that we've established all that, we're going to have Joe read all three of the emails. Joe?
All right. Well, let's start with the first one, which is a Discord, not an email.
This all is from Discord.
Yeah, I know. Kinos, question for the podcast. With 10.1 on the horizon and its focus on Deathwing, I've been thinking about Cataclysm. I was 10 years old when Cataclysm came out, so I don't really remember much about what it was like going through the content cycle. I would love to hear about your experience going through the opening and patch cycle of Cataclysm. I also would like to hear about your first time seeing the random world event where Deathwing would show up and set fire to his own. I think it can be best summed up from my end of, oh God, oh God, oh God, I can't get out of here. Oh no, I'm on fire. I'm dead. Okay, let me go. Okay, let's try this again. No, I gotta get out of here, the event where Deathwing would randomly come and like torch his own was actually really fun and funny, because if you weren't paying attention, it would just completely it would just catch you off guard. It would just do it would be hilarious, in my opinion, at least.
I remember going through the Twilight Highlands doing the wedding quests, the wedding series of quest lines.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on my way back to tell them, okay, I've managed to get everybody to allow you two to get married. And I literally just rode over a hill and there Deathwing was coming right at me, like zooming down across the land. And I was like, I didn't even have time to swear. Like I was like opening my mouth for the obscenity and then foof, and he just burned half the zone and flew away and I was dead. And I was standing there going, I go through a lot of trouble to get two dwarves I don't even know married. Wow. Okay, then. But yeah, it was like literally just Deathwing had a lot of I certainly have had problems with the story of Cataclysm. I had things I didn't like. But I will say that in his appearances, what Deathwing may have lacked in long-term strategic planning, he made up for in sheer menacing. I'd never seen a WoW boss as terrifying to look at as that thing. Because it was big. He was really big. He was a kaiju. He was big enough that they had a fight on his back. Like it was crazy. The first time you saw him just flying over a zone, he was just there. And then he was just gone and you were on fire. So yeah, that was my experience of it, Liz.
Well, my experience of it was that I quit the game in Cataclysm, because in addition to all of this Deathwing stuff, Cataclysm came with some huge changes to classes. And I was playing a Holy Paladin at the time, and they turned that upside down and inside out. It was a totally different class when Cataclysm arrived. I bet I didn't play for 2 weeks, and I was out. So I missed the whole Deathwing thing. I mean, I played the quest later, but when I did the quest later, it wasn't like Deathwing coming over the land to set me on fire. So I missed that whole thing. That's kind of sad.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little sad because it was hilarious how many times I died. Going through the dev cycle of like opening day and stuff like that though too, and it was always interesting. Cataclysm was a very divisive expansion for a lot of people because it got rid of the old world, forced you to re-experience zones in a different way. completely shook up things that we had for, I don't want to say taken for granted, but grown accustomed to, like, you know, the dwarf starting area and the area around it and 1,000 needles and everything else. Like, everything changed. And so it became an interesting experience that captured that exploration feeling that WoW 1.0, that vanilla WoW had when it released. When we first got into game, I remember feeling like this big sense of wonder and awe at like the scope and scale of the game, going through and just digging for places and just wandering around for hours. Cataclysm gave much the same feel, because while everything was familiar, there was so much that was new. Whether you loved it or hated it, there was really no in between. I also remember, because I was a shaman, which surprises, I'm sure, absolutely legitimately no one, when Cataclysm released, that was the most powerful we had ever been. And I remember Elemental blowing things up like crazy. I remember Enhancement just like one-shotting things again, which made it feel like the old days of like Hand of Rag with Enhancement. And then healing, like you were just untouchable. And then seeing how that got clawed back as patches released every single time and watching the balance shift and move down. It was a very wild time. I also remember a lot of classes swinging very energetically from one extreme to another as they were trying to balance things out. because everything changed. There were brand new, it was a brand new talent system. It was a brand new.
Yeah, they cut the talent system in half.
Yeah.
Keep in mind that people often forget that. I think when I was writing about talent changes for Dragonflight, the thing I mentioned was that the Cataclysm talent change was the first time we saw anything like this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. up until that, WoW had only just added talent points. In both Burning Crusade and Wrath of the Lich King, the talent system just got bigger. They just added more stuff to it. They didn't really, I mean, they took individual things out, but the shape of it had not changed. And in Cataclysm, it went from, like, I think the capstone talents were like 51 points to you had 51 points total spread across three, because how many they just chopped out. They literally cut it in half. So yeah, the talent system was a big shock. I think also, when did we get dual specialization? I actually think
it was
specialization. Wrath. Yeah, we got it in Wrath, but didn't they like change it up so that everybody just had all three in Cataclysm? Because I remember there being a big shift to the talent system. I remember like leveling through the Worgen starting zone, and it was significantly different playing a character than it had ever been before. Like, I think you just picked which one you wanted to be. Like, okay, yeah, I'm level 10, I'm in arms now. Just boom. And it's remained that way pretty much since. So that was actually a really big change. There was a lot to it. I just remember, honestly, the biggest problem I had was running dungeons in the first couple months, because people would not understand that you couldn't just Wrath of the Lich Kingdom. You couldn't just run through and just pull everything and have it follow you and just kill it all in one spot. Mobs were hitting hard. I think we did didn't we do like a live stream type thing where it was Liz, you, yes, and me,
yeah,
Joe, Alex, and we actually did Dead Mines.
There was a lot of us, and I remember things just hitting real hard.
Yeah, like tanks, really. It was really, tanks mm-hmm. were getting massacred. They were hitting like a truck. Because this was also an item squish. The first item squish was Cataclysm. So yeah, there was a lot of change. There was a lot of change going in. But I think that's all I've got to say on it.
Well, let me bring this back up to 10.1 and ask you two, do you think Deathwing can be as menacing in 10.1 as he was when we saw him before?
Yes, but I don't think it's about the menace anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like that's the thing. Things have evolved character wise for what we're experiencing. So back in Cataclysm, Deathwing 100% absolutely was the villain. It was the looming threat. We had dealt with his children, him coming back. We were told how awful he was, how he sundered the world and did all this other stuff. Like, and he like this mad scientist, the whole nine. As years have gone on and expansions have released, yeah, he did a lot of horrible things, but look at all the things we've faced. We've essentially punched gods, right? Like we've fought God. We've fought death. We've fought, the Pantheon. We've fought the entirety of the Legion. We've done all of these things that Deathwing didn't or couldn't do. So it's not about the menace anymore. It's about uncovering the secrets, because that's the last thing that Neltharion, that Deathwing has, is just a pile of secrets, things that he kept hidden from everybody, experiments and tragedies that we kind of knew happened. Logically they had to happen, but we weren't really forced to like have it in our face. Now we have to go dig through it. Like, it's completely different. So that's my two cents. Matt, what do you think?
I think in terms of whether or not he can be as menacing, I think it's sort of what you were talking about, Joe, but also just kind of a general feeling of the menace here is in what his actions have caused. Like, the legacy, we keep hearing with the legacy of Deathwing, the legacy of Neltharion, the legacy of the Black Dragonflight. Think about how much of that stuff is stuff he caused. Like, we're going to like this weird hidden laboratory where he was obviously experimenting with like all sorts of stuff he should not have been experimenting with. Basically, if there was a giant box and Neltharion came across it, the giant box just said, "Don't push the red button," he would spend several minutes trying to figure out how to get somebody else to push the red button so he could see the effects. Like, this is not a dragon who liked to stop and think about what he was doing. So I feel like that's the real thing here is to find out exactly what did he do? Like, what did he cause? What did he set in motion? Why did the Drakthyr exist? What was going on in Avarice? Why are the incarnates so convinced it's going to destroy the aspects? Like, Neltharion's been dead for a long time, guys, and they helped kill him. So what do you think we're going to find that's going to be so destructive to the aspects? Because they say as much, you know, they flat out say as much. And so, yeah, I do find myself wondering, what exactly was he up to? What was Avarice for? Like, is Avarice like the lab you have when you don't want to have a lab anywhere near your stuff for fear it's going to get blown up? Like, is this a hot lab, basically, if you remember Mass Effect with the hot labs? Is it like that? Like, what's the deal with Avarice? And we know we're going to be fighting some kind of like recording of Neltharion. We know that. We've been told that. And we know that the final fight involves all these weird sky maps and strange altars and weird portals. Like, I feel like that's where the menace is. The menace isn't like in Cataclysm, they leaned heavily on the whole gigantic fire breathing nightmare dragon. I feel like here we're going to get to look at the Neltharion, who's a smart thinker, but who always tends to like, he kind of overestimates just how good he is at getting out of trouble. I feel like the Drakthyr cinematics really show this. Like, he thought he was fine. Like, he could just use this Titan artifact and wield the Drakthyr as like a living weapon and everything would be great. He wasn't expecting to get it broken. And when it got broken, he falls back on his next Xanatos gambit, which is, I guess I'll call on the old gods. You know, how long was he talking to old gods that he could just do that? Like, there's a lot to find out. So that's where I think the menace is in this time around. But I'm the host of the show, so when I stop talking,
no, sorry, that's fair.
I have to jump in. So yeah, I guess we're up to the next one, Joe.
Cool. That is going to be a game mechanics question from Daffid? Daffid?
Hopefully. I think it's Daffid.
All right. Have you heard anything about normal flying being enabled on the Dragon Isles? My gaming setup is not conventional. I play on a laptop and a recliner and do not use a mouse, using keybinds as much as possible. This makes dragon flying or dragon riding very punishing, and I avoid it as much as possible. When I am flying dragonback, it is completely out of control experience with lots of dismounts, as the touchpad interprets the wrong kind of click to some part of my UI, and I dismount and fall to my death. That sounds very unpleasant. I have nothing against the many players who love dragonflying and want to use it in the next in the previous expansion zones, and would love to see it as an option at some point for them. I'm not sure that I agree with the ones that want the dragonfly mechanics on their old flying mounts. That seems like a step too far development-wise, unless the old mount is an actual dragon. Couple things. I think that we should have both, and I'm a big proponent of that. Because you've just hit the nail on the head. It's an accessibility thing. And it's something that I haven't seen a lot of talk about, which concerns me. And this is something that I really hope the developers talk about or you know, actually are paying attention to is that people with mobility problems or any sort of like impairment or just limitation that prevents them from doing dragon riding makes a lot of what makes this expansion fun for players inaccessible. And a lot of that can be fixed with things like adding normal flying, like you've just pointed out. If you can't do dragon riding, put normal flying into the game again. Let that be a thing so that players can progress and hover in place, and it's a much smoother experience for them overall. I think I talked about this before where, you know, like there were people that were reporting motion sickness in like early beta Dragonflight testing because of the motion blur that was present, right? They walked some of that back and fixed some of that, but like it can be very disorienting. I still hear from people that find like landing disorienting. They addressed some of that with giving you the stop button now, which does make things a little bit easier for people as you then glide down to the ground. But I do think giving that accessibility back is paramount. I don't think that dragon riding should replace flying everywhere, but I would not be upset if they just added that as an option for older zones. Like, do I think dragon riding through the old world zones would be fun? Yes, but they weren't designed for that. They're not going to have the same clearances. It's not going to have the same effect as it does in Dragonflight. So that's my two cents on it. Liz, what do you think?
I also play on a laptop, and until Dragonflight, I frequently did not use a mouse of any sort. And I was a fan of this because the great thing about playing on a laptop and just using your trackpad is you can keep both hands on the keyboard and the trackpad is where your thumbs are. You don't have to move your hands off the keyboard. You have those keybinds immediately accessible on both sides of the keyboard all the time. That was great. Now, I agree with you. It's completely uncontrollable on a trackpad. You can do it, but it's 10 times as difficult. And it's not fun. It's super not fun. And I use a trackball now. I can't do the mouse thing. It just bothers my wrist too much. And that works fine, but you've got to be in a situation where you can switch from one to the other. And there are disadvantages to using a mouse or trackball because, you know, now I don't have both my hands on the keyboard, or I have to move my hand off the mouse to the keyboard. And that makes it harder to hit some hotkeys. Like there's bad things all around. I really don't think you should have to change your complete gaming setup in order to play an expansion. But I have. I now use an external keyboard and mouse because if I'm using a mouse, it's harder to reach my laptop. You know, it's before Dragonflight and after Dragonflight, my computer setup has completely changed. And that's kind of ridiculous. Now that I have this setup and I use it this way, I have really enjoyed dragon riding, but you can't use it just with a trackpad. It just does not work. Blizzard has talked about accessibility, and the big accessibility feature is that ride-along feature. If it's enabled, you can basically like click on someone who's dragon riding, who's in your party, and just fly along with them. But that still really limits you because you can't do that unless you got a buddy who is doing the same thing you are.
Yep.
Matt, do you have opinions?
Well, I mean, I don't like to harp on it, but we all know I'm blind. Mm-hmm. Like, one of my eyes doesn't work at all, and the other one about half works. Anything with a motion blur, it makes me want to just hurl. Like I'm the guy who was tanking Grimrail Depot with my eyes closed because I couldn't handle when you'd get out onto the train and it would be doing the movement stuff around you to make you feel like you were on a moving train. I had to like either aim my character at the ground or close my eyes because I would just get nauseated in seconds. I still to this day can't do Overwatch because of motion effects and like swooping in, swooping out effects, all the various things that happen on screen. It's just too much. It just overwhelms my eyes. I actually like dragon riding. I have no problem doing it, but I understand that not everybody can do it. Like it is something that they have deliberately made to add a skill challenge aspect to flying. And I get why people really like it. and a lot of people who have never ever stopped to think about what it would be like to just suddenly not be able to play your game because it hasn't happened to them yet. But I remember when it started happening to me. I remember the exact fight it started happening. This was Mists of Pandaria. Up till Mists of Pandaria, I had like been tanking at the highest level of raid difficulty for several expansions. I joined guilds and they would help have me explain to them how to do fights, and we would clear those fights together. Like that's how into it I was. We get down to the last boss before the Shah of Pride thing. I forget which one, Norishin? Yeah, Norishin. And there's the part where it sends the tank downstairs. And because of the effects they were using on that fight, I couldn't see anything. And I didn't know at the time that I was losing my vision. I just knew that I couldn't see down there. They put me down there and I couldn't see what was going on. And so I would die over and over and over again. And it was maddening to me. And I didn't even realize at the time what was happening. But I was physically incapable of doing this. And cut through, you know, a few years later, around 2016, the blood vessel pops in my eye, go to the eye doctor, and next thing we know, oh yeah, you're blind. As a result of that, I'm very sensitive to that for other people, whatever the reason is. And I feel like in this case, dragon riding is a really great idea. It's really fun. If you can do it, it's a lot of fun. But if you can't do it, it's nothing but frustration. And it isn't as simple as get good.
Yeah. And
sometimes people just cannot do this physically. Like, it would be very easy for me if they hadn't cut back on the visual effect of this flying forward. Like, when you get really going in dragon riding, I still have to close my eyes.
Yeah.
I cannot look at the screen when I'm really whipping because it is just so fast around me. And it's like, oh, nope. I'm going to get sick. So yeah, I think I get why people don't want to have it enabled on the Dragon Isles. I understand that it's so slow and plodding in comparison. Even like a 350 speed mount is just flap, 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 flap. I'm there. But for some people, they'd rather have that than not be able to play.
Yeah. And like,
I kind of have to agree with it.
Not to hijack it or anything like that, but like one of my very, very good friends, Nikki Williams, she's an advocate for accessibility in video games, right? That's what she does. That's one of her things. And there's a whole community like thriving and pushing in the industry for accessibility across all video games, because like Matt said, he said the magic words, right? Like back in 2000, like if you were playing a game and being bad at it, you might not have known something was wrong with you and everybody would just tell you to get good. It's not like that anymore. We talk about how we're getting older and things like that. We shouldn't have to sacrifice things we like, such as video games, things we enjoy doing, things that are hobbies of ours, if there are ways for us to enjoy it with accessibility options. And WoW has done an amazing job. Like the development team for Warcraft has done an amazing job of putting accessibility features into the game. There's just more work to be done. And stuff like dragon riding really highlights like this really cool feature that not everybody can enjoy and becomes a hard barrier for players, because there is literally and legitimately content you cannot reach without dragon riding. There is events you cannot get to, daily quests you will never be able to do unless you have dragon riding. That's not good. So going back to it, like if regular flight is an accessibility option that allows players to do that, there's zero reason in my mind not to put it into the game as an option. Options are good. Accessibility is good. The more people that play your game, the better.
I think part of the problem is that dragon riding has been so baked in mm-hmm. to the Dragonflight expansion. It's mm-hmm. so much a part of the expansion's DNA. And it's not easy. You can't just fly from place to place. You got to really work at it. And it can be a fun challenge, but it can also be like, man, I just want to go where I need to go. I don't want to fly around in circles. I don't want to have
miss
to
that node. Gotta turn around. Oh, have to land.
Now I have to do a spiral around in circles, whirling madly, not being able to see where I'm trying to land because I'm going so fast until I run out of vigor and I land somewhere I don't mean to land, and I'm surrounded by angry elite mobs. I mean, I'm okay at dragon riding. I'm at least okay, but I do stuff like that, and it's frustrating when you run out of vigor, and then it's like, okay, I'm trotting along on the ground for a while until I can get back up there. And anyone who has flown in a Zer span, and you know, the span is all downhill in one direction, but it's all uphill in the other direction.
Yeah, it is super easy to get from like the side of Zer span that's near the boundary to Thaldrassus. That's super easy. You just point the nose slightly down and just go.
Done. You're all the way across the zone at high speed.
Yeah. You want to go the other way? Find a high point. Good. And get ready to dive a lot.
There is no high point to dive off of, and you're just going to sit on the ground, and you're going to go up for a little while. Then you're going to sit on the, you know, there are places for dragon riding.
There's a way to do it, but it's really annoying because you have to find one of those towers that sometimes the ones that have the dragon glyphs in it. So if you manage to get to one of them and manage to get to the top of it before you run out of vigor, you know, kudos, you're really good. Mm. But eventually you'll get up there. Then you have to wait and wait for your vigor to come back. And then you have to basically fly. Seriously, it's like you have to fly with I want to aim at the ground, but I don't want to aim straight at the ground. And it's like, this is a lot of granularity to how I'm going to crash this dragon if this doesn't work. There are aspects that I find less.
I will say one note about dragon riding back in the rest of Azeroth is Blizzard has said that it's like a specific set of animations for our dragon riding mounts that are like, these dragons that we can ride here are, you know, designed with that in mind. And it would actually be a lot of work to rig up old mounts to do these kind of motions that give you that sense of speed that the dragon riding mounts have. And, you know, their special abilities, like the one where you go really far forward and your dragon does this twirl, which looks really cool, but old mounts are not designed for those animations. So there is currently no plan that I am aware of to bring this back to the rest of the world because it would be complicated.
It would also be weird to like take a dragon riding mount to the old world and dragon ride on it because those zones aren't designed for it.
Yeah. I mentioned that earlier.
You're going to end up feeling really strange trying to like do it. And like some of the zones, they seem pretty big to us.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were on an 800-900% flying mount, you'd be like, whoa, okay, I guess I'm going to have to come back to that zone.
I've passed that zone and now I'm somewhere. I'm two zones away.
I'm in Mulgore. I didn't know that was
going to
happen.
One thing I would like is if I could have my dragon riding mount and when I go back to the rest of the world, I could use that mount to just do normal flying. I would be super into that because then I would not have to be, you know, okay, I've portaled to Orgrimmar. I'm going to do this. And I like hit my dragon riding keybind, but no, that doesn't work. And then I hit my, you know, normal mount keybind and I go up for a while. Then I go back to the Dragon Isles and I hit my, you know, normal mount keybind because I'm used to doing that after doing it for a while. And then I can't take to the sky, you know, just give us the option. Give us the option.
Okay. Do we have time for like the one last one?
We're already at
time, I think, by like 2 minutes, but it's up to you. We can do the last one here.
I mean, yeah, cause I have a quick answer for it.
Okay.
All right. Daikaiju, asks, do they ever not update Diablo 2? I'm getting PS3 flashbacks. Also, is there any point to keeping the Diablo 4 beta on my PC? They keep updating that too.
Yeah, they update Diablo 2 a lot. It gets a lot of small updates. It gets a fair amount of big updates. It is a pretty continuously updated thing. Keep in mind that it is unlike the original Diablo 2. It's always on. Like it reaches out to the servers, to Blizzard servers, to get information for the game. So they're constantly making updates to how they do that and how effective it is. So yeah, it gets updated a lot. As for Diablo 4, go ahead, Liz.
I think it's a little bit like World of Warcraft where you log on and it's like, why are you sitting here updating? I just want to play the game. There hasn't been a patch.
Yeah.
And it feels a little like Diablo does that too. You start it up and it phones home and it maybe downloads something little.
Yeah. What we call a micro patch, barely even noticeable, but it fixes one or two things. Yeah. It does do that a lot. As for the Diablo 4 beta, they have not announced a new beta. Maybe they'll do one. Maybe they don't, but if they do, you'll probably be able to download it again. I mean, there's no reason to keep it if you don't want to keep it for whatever reason. I've left it on mine because it's not taking up that much space and doesn't hurt me none. But if you want to get rid of it, I mean, they have not even said they're going to do another beta. So I would say go ahead.
It's only 80 gigabytes of space after all. I mean, I'm keeping it because if they do another beta, I don't want to re-download 80 gigabytes of client.
Yeah, you're going to end up having to with that client on there, you're still going to end up with like a 20 gig download most likely. So yeah, there's a big difference between 20 and 80.
Yeah, I think they're going to do another beta, but that's, I don't know anything. That's just a guess on my part. I think we're going to have another beta period at some point. We're seven weeks away from launch. I think we're going to do more testing.
Yeah, that seems likely. But like I said, they haven't announced it yet. And even if they do, if it really is bothering you to have it there, go ahead and take it off. If you're like me and you don't really mind it, keep it on. No, I left it on my Xbox just in case. I really liked it on the Xbox. Quite frankly, the compatibility between Xbox and PC was great. I loved it. I could just play it in here, and then I could go out and play it in the living room, and I could come back and play it in here. And I'm pretty sure when this game comes out, I am going to just stop eating. Yeah, when will I have time?
I don't recommend it.
If they put it on the Switch, quite frankly, I'm dead. That's it. That's me. I'm done. Just plug it directly into my head at this point. Don't even bother with the console. Just plug it into my head. Anyway, though, I think that does it for this. Is anyone else have anything they want to say to this question before we go?
No, I think you nailed it.
Liz?
No.
Alrighty then. First off, guys, Joe is going to do a spiel, and then I'll do a spiel, and then we'll be done.
Yes, because did you know that Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch? Your continued support means that this podcast signing community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like having early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you very much, Joe. Thank you again to both Joe and Liz for being here, being, you know, awesome co-hosts and covering when my cat knocks something over outside and it sounds like all heck has broken loose, so I have to go run and check on it. You're both amazing, and I especially love the 25-minute D&D Druid discussion we had on the pre-show. If you're not listening to the pre-shows, man, you should start. Those are great. You can be a patron supporter and you can get those sent to you, or you can just listen when we live stream and boom, there they are. Piping hot like pizza, except, you know, not at all in any way. But this has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. If you've got a question for the podcast, you can send it to our email, podcast@blizzardwatch.com, or you can use our Discord. We have two channels for patrons. We have the Patron Q and Podcast Questions channel, and for non-patrons, we have the Podcast Q and Podcast Questions channel. You can use any and all of those methods. You can also use telepathy if you have it. So far, no one sent their thoughts to me, as far as I'm aware, but I really am going to get my dog a treat. Oh, no, okay, the dog does, but nobody else has. But yeah, this has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. Thank you guys so much for being here with us, and we will be back next week.